This is Brian Cambria with news for the Western Slope this Memorial Day, Monday, May 27, 2013. A local company that manufactures high-efficiency commercial solar energy products has completed installation of a photovoltaic system at the Montrose Wastewater Treatment Plant. The system is expected to generate electric cost savings of nearly $8,000 annually, and was accomplished with the help of a $231,000 grant from the Colorado Department of Local Affairs. The city and Brightleaf Power will host an event at 11 a.m. this Thursday, May 30th, at the wastewater treatment plant to mark the completion of the project and showcase the high-tech alternative energy products that are being developed in Montrose. The public is encouraged to attend. The city will use electrical energy generated by the new installation to offset grid consumption. Plans are being made to install a similar system to serve a communication site on Sunset Mesa. This project, funded by a grant from the Governor's Energy Office, is expected to be completed by the end of August. According to a city official, over the past 3 years, the city has reduced energy consumption at the wastewater treatment plant by 12%, amounting to a combined savings of over $65,000. The plant is located at 3315 North Townsend Avenue. A construction zone in Glenwood Canyon, where two head-on collisions have claimed four lives this spring, is scheduled to revert back to its normal traffic pattern on June 3rd. According to the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel, Colorado Department of Transportation spokeswoman Nancy Shanks said last week the agency will review the latest accident, which claimed one life on May 22nd, to determine whether there's anything that can be done to reduce the risk of crashes in such construction zones. But she said the type of work zone set up in the canyon is used in many places with head-to-head traffic, with measures including a double-striped no-passing center line, a lower speed limit, doubled fines for speeding, and heavy use of signs. Last week, Colorado State Patrol Trooper Graham Thorne said that an investigation into the crash was continuing and the exact cause hadn't yet been determined. Authorities also had yet to release the identification of the woman killed. Thorne said confirming identification was made more complicated because the car was a rental and because of the fiery nature of the crash. He said witnesses were able to rescue three other occupants from the vehicle the woman was driving, but the fire got too intense for them to get to her. The eastbound Mazda struck an oncoming semi after veering into the westbound lane. The accident occurred where eastbound I-70 traffic is currently being diverted into what is normally a westbound lane, while concrete resurfacing of eastbound lanes concludes in part of the canyon. In April, a teenage driver from Glenwood Springs and two occupants of the car she was driving died in the canyon when she drove out of her lane and struck a truck head-on. Authorities later determined the teen's blood alcohol level was more than three times Colorado's legal limit. Both accidents occurred at night. Shanks said CDOT reviews all fatalities that occur on state highways. After the earlier Glenwood Canyon accident, it determined the work zone was up to standards. But, Shanks said, quote, that doesn't mean there's never any room for improvement, end quote. She said some have suggested placing cones along the center line. Cones can pose their own dangers when struck and knocked into other lanes. Thorne said he can't speak for the state patrol as a whole, but as a trooper, his biggest concern in the canyon is the general traveling public just drives too fast, he said. He also said people drive through the 40-mile-per-hour construction zone as fast as 70, but the canyon is a hard place to stop speeders. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that tests showed no benzene in Parachute Creek last week, in another sign that remediation efforts related to a natural gas liquids leak there are proving effective. Parachute Town Administrator Robert Knight said Thursday aeration treatment of the creek and groundwater has done a good job, to quote him. The gas company Williams estimates that about 10,000 gallons of natural gas liquids leaked into soil and groundwater from a pipeline leaving its gas processing plant farther up the creek in the valley. Williams has been using air sparging and related methods to remove carcinogenic benzene in groundwater and the creek at a point downstream where the benzene has been moving from the groundwater into the surface water. Benzene in surface water once barely topped the state drinking water standard of 5 parts per billion, although the standard doesn't apply to the creek. And for a time, it showed up at lower levels at a few points downstream. However, Williams noted in a recent update at its website that those benzene levels have steadily declined since May 2nd. However, trace levels at one measurement site had continued to linger. No benzene has ever been detected where Parachute diverts water for its town irrigation system farther downstream. Knight said diversions into that system began about 2 weeks ago. He said that with the success and efforts to clean up the creek, he's not hearing any concerns from residents about irrigation water. He said of greater concern to him is the low level of the creek due to the lack of snowpack. The leak situation has raised questions about how benzene conditions might change when spring runoff occurs, but Knight said he flew over the creek watershed and the snowpack that feeds it was already gone, reflecting what might normally be seen in August. As of last Friday, Williams had estimated that it had recovered almost 6,800 gallons of the leaked natural gas liquids. The company is projecting that a water treatment system it will use to remove and clean groundwater before returning it to the aquifer will be in service by June. Delta County Commissioners have said they will announce their decision at 8:30 a.m. tomorrow on the latest legal wrangling over the one-year-old hen-laying operation on Powell Mesa. Neighbors have complained that dust, manure, and dander emanating from the 15,000 chickens in the facility compromised their health. A March ruling by Judge J. Stephen Patrick sent the case back to the commissioners, who took testimony May 1st in a third public hearing on the chicken farm. At issue in the last hearing were the results of county-ordered air quality tests and the validity of a scholarly article submitted to commissioners by Environmental Health Director Ken Nordstrom. Nearly 500 species of birds make their way through Colorado or live here year-round, and chances are local birder and author Evelyn Horn knows them. In the second report of a two-part series, KVNF's Marty Derlin talks to Horn about the general decline of birds in a world where human population and activity is on the rise.
I met Evelyn Horn in Eckerd at Hart's Basin, also called Fruit Growers Reservoir, where she goes nearly every day to gaze at birds, to count them, to identify them, and enjoy their songs. After a brief tour of the reservoir, we went to her house to have a cup of tea while we talked further.
What could you say about the state of birds? Climate change is probably impacting them.
Yes.
Certainly human activity,
yes,
as you've talked about.
Yes.
How would you characterize?
Declining because of the conditions. There used to be a lot more birds than there are now. And house cats. Well, the little bird gets down and does scratch, scratch, scratch. He's vulnerable.
Yeah. Windmills, pesticides.
Oh, yeah.
Are the species themselves declining, or just the numbers of...
The species themselves. Now, the cranes, in particular, there are 5 subspecies. Ours are greater. They're declining. The other 3 are non-migratory. But the lesser sandhills that go up the Platte River, they're 500,000 strong. Every other crane in the world is threatened or endangered to whatever degree.
Mm-hmm.
And that's primarily human activity. The roads we build that slices up the terrain. When we put a road in, we create a little border area. So this little road doesn't look like much, but it's got a border area. Well, that's a good place for animals, for critters. And that's also a good place to get run over.
And do you notice anything about climate change, just or the effects of drought, or
We're in a drought, and from where we were standing, sometimes the water is all along the north side, north of the road, and further up it, where it just looks like alkali now. Cranes like to stand in the water 6 to 8 inches deep to roost, so a predator makes noise. And that north pond was just perfect roosting. Well, we didn't have it at all this year. So they were just had to do with the shoreline. And the closer they get to the shore, the more likely there will be a predator. Bobcat's a big one. Fox, coyote.
Feral dogs. Kitty. Yeah, feral dog.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bobcat is the biggest predator on them.
Hmm.
A mink or one of the muskrats might decide to take a bite when they're standing in the water because they're too close to the shore where those critters live. We have been highly impacted this year with the drought and the lack of water.
It's not perfect. But Horn is a person who looks on the bright side.
It was built as an irrigation reservoir, and that is its purpose. I just feel that we're lucky to have the birds. The birds found the water, and the birders found the birds.
For KVNF News and I See Change at thealmanac.org, I'm Marty Derlin.
On I See Change at thealmanac.org last week, more serviceberry blossoms, the first buckwheat seedlings, huge dandelions, a racer snake, and lots of dust and wind. If you see change in the natural world, note it. Ask a question or answer a question at thealmanac.org. That's one place where you can be a part of two-way radio. The Watch newspaper reports forest management issues, pending wilderness legislation, the fate of the Gunnison sage grouse, and other topics of local and regional concern will be up for discussion at a town hall meeting with U.S. Representative Scott Tipton in Ouray tomorrow. The meeting is scheduled from 6 until 7 p.m. at the Ouray Community Center. And finally, it's Memorial Day. Here are a few of the events being held around our area to honor our veterans. In Delta, the VFW Post No. 3571 and its Lady Auxiliary is hosting their annual Memorial Day Pancake Breakfast and Yard Sale. It's at the IOOF Hall, the International Order of Odd Fellows, at the hall on Highway 92 in Delta. And all-you-can-eat breakfast will be served from 7 until 11 a.m. In Grand Junction, the Grand Junction Memorial Gardens invites the public to its Memorial Day celebration from 9 until noon today. The TAPS report begins at 11 a.m., and families can add names to be read during TAPS. The flag raising is at noon. In Montrose, Disabled American Veterans Moore Demerot Chapter 17 will hold its annual Memorial Day ceremony at Cedar Creek Cemetery on East Miami Road at 10 a.m. That's today. Most government offices in KVNF's listening area will be closed in recognition of Memorial Day. To all veterans and their families, from all of us at KVNF, thank you. Thus concludes today's newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria. Good day.